Please silence all electronic devices.
What's the period of time under which one person should have complete authority to make decisions in an emergency? You know, is that 5 days? Is it 10 days? Is it 30 days?
But as a practical matter, Forrest hasn't articulated any plan that's any different or more as good as what Cooper has put forth. And I ultimately don't think this is going to do him a whole lot of good.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the auxiliary Fourth Estate Bunker, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Thank you for downloading and clicking play. Time again to get caught up, at least a little bit, as to what happened this week in state politics. We'll chat about what's ahead this coming weekend, what might be ahead when it comes to public schools, and a little bit more from the legislative front. Here for the discussion, as usual, are Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray with the Conservative John Locke Foundation. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to be back.
Still socially distanced, we're taping on a Thursday afternoon. The decision on whether to open public schools this fall will not be made until later in the month. Governor Cooper said this week he needs more time to issue a directive. Students could return full-time, part-time, or carry on entirely with virtual learning. The governor is being typically methodical with this, but I'm wondering if you think he's taking too much time. With confirmed cases and hospitalizations continuing to trend upward and a projected spike this fall, is it really feasible to open at full capacity or partial capacity?
It's going to be very tough. This is, this is where the buck stops. It's an incredibly difficult call for the governor, and he obviously needs as much data as he can possibly gather. So, you know, for instance, we're going in now to a 4th of July weekend where we are very fearful that there are going to be a lot of gatherings and we'll probably see yet another spike. So he's got to take that all into account. And frankly, I think whatever gets decided, we're going to be making adjustments. Who the heck knew, you know, 3 months ago that we know what we know now? So gosh knows that by October, things will be very different. So he's making the best judgment he can. I saw where the Wake County schools this week have moved towards at least coming up with a plan for moving to sort of a middle ground hybrid plan. And I have a sort of sense that that's probably the direction we're headed to statewide, but that's the most complicated plan. It's going to take a lot of work to put together. So, you know, they don't want to do it in a half-cocked kind of way, but it's a big conundrum. It's just like the university is a huge conundrum there as well as to how to do this. There doesn't appear to be any good way. It's just doing the best possible way that will do the least possible damage.
Yep, I agree. I mean, this is a tough decision and one that, you know, it does take considerable consideration, thoughtful consideration, getting a lot of information. I understand that the different school districts around the state are weighing in. I think the thing that was disappointing this week was that we had been told that there would be a decision being made on Wednesday, and it was kind of late the night before the governor came out and said no, he wasn't ready to make one, and then just said it, you know, in a couple weeks without any real definitive plans. For, I think, a lot of teachers, for a lot of parents who are trying to make plans as to what kind of child care may be required or other plans that they need to make in order to make these adjustments, like Rob said, I mean, it could be some sort of hybrid. I mean, we just don't know at this point. And so it's left a lot of families kind of up in the air. It's also left some schools and some teachers up in the air as to how are they going to get their classrooms prepared for whatever may be coming down the pike.
I couldn't help but think just the quick personal reaction I had this week was, I thought about my time as an athlete. I thought about my time. I played the trumpet growing up. I played it in high school. And I just thought, if it's two of these three, you're not going to have sports. You're not going to have band. You're not going to have theater. You're not going to have so many things that I think for a lot of students, for me, that was way better than English class anyway, right? And those things, I think, effectively are most likely off the table. So I feel for the students. I really do. I just, that's a throwaway comment, but it's a tough one.
Yeah, another point that along those lines, I mean, for the students that are going into their junior year or senior year, and some of the grades, not some of the grades, I mean, their grades and their performance and the records during that time are going to determine in large part, you know, what their college applications look like. So, Jeff, you're right. I mean, the extracurricular activities are very important to many students. And then there's just the logistics of the records that are being accumulated, that then they will enter a very competitive college entry situation as they move forward with it too.
Yeah, we're just making the best of a rotten, miserable situation that it's, you know, it's vexing for all of us. And it's, this is what happens in pandemics. I mean, you just, there is no real good solution to a lot of these problems. We're just trying to make the best and hoping that things will get better soon. The only thing that would make it worse is if we add another 10,000 people to the funeral list in North Carolina, and we don't want that to happen.
Meanwhile, Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest sued the governor this week. Reminder, Forrest is running against Cooper in November. Forrest says this lawsuit is about how Cooper went about issuing executive orders during the pandemic, not the substance of those orders. It's effectively a process argument. And Forrest contends Cooper should have received the backing from the Council of State. That's a group of elected officials. The governor has said repeatedly that he has statutory authority to do what he did. If this is about process, I'm curious as to why you think Forrest didn't file the lawsuit sooner, like 3 months ago, and how come no other GOP Council of State members joined this suit?
Those are good questions, and I don't know the answer to any of that. I mean, this has become kind of a standoff between the governor and the Council of State, and particularly Dan Forrest has made this an issue. And there seems to be a real difference just with legal scholars, whether or not there is clear authority. I mean, the governor has stated again today in one of his veto messages that he says the Emergency Management Act clearly provides the governor with statutory authority to direct the state's response to a public health emergency. So he clearly has staked out his position on it. I think there's enough ambiguity in it. I'm not a lawyer, but what I'm hearing from legal scholars is there could be an argument made on either side of it. So, you know, how this proceeds and what the ultimate decision is, I guess, will be made through the courts.
Well, that's probably right. It will be made in the courts, but I think there's no doubt that this is a political move by the lieutenant governor. He's lagging way back in the polls. He has sort of cast his lot with the more rapid reopen crowd, but he's got to try to do something to sort of stand out. And if you don't think this is political, I've got some of Trump's surplus hydroxychloroquine to sell you, because it's clearly a political move. He's trying to get some attention on at a time in which the governor is dominating the news and has high popularity approval ratings for all of the actions he's taken, and Forrest is in a tough spot, so he's got to throw a Hail Mary. I doubt it'll work, but I suppose he feels it's worth a try.
Becky, you see this as a campaign maneuver, right? In part?
Probably in part, but, you know, I think it does raise some questions that at some point I think that we should address these. And under the state's Emergency Management Act, this it was designed and authored at a point when really what we were thinking about emergency managements were things like hurricanes and flooding and things that occurred in a very short span of time, in that there would be emergency precautions or emergency things that would need to be put in place for a very short period of time. I don't think anybody anticipated a global pandemic that would go on for months. So I think that this question of how long, what's the period of time under which one person should have complete authority to make decisions in an emergency? You know, is that 5 days? Is it 10 days? Is it 30 days? Is it forever and ever and ever? I think those are questions that, from a policy standpoint, really deserve a closer look and maybe a reevaluation in light of what we've been going through.
I guess I'll just say, I guarantee you that if Forrest were governor, he would not be making this argument. This is a natural kind of debate that always goes on between chief executives and other parties. It's happening at the national level. It's always going to happen. But we've had repeated attempts by the General Assembly to take away power from Governor Cooper. So it's sort of the latest in this power dance that goes on. But as a practical matter, Forrest hasn't articulated any plan that's any different or more as good as what Cooper has put forth. And I ultimately don't think this is going to do him a whole lot of good.
It does remind me a little bit of like the independent redistricting conversations, right? And long before I was at the legislature, David Lewis and Phil Berger and Tom Tillis all said, we want independent redistricting. And then they came into power. And of course, it's much harder to enact something as monumental as that when you're in power. And I'm reminded of, you know, some of the refrains we've heard recently from Democratic members about if they get the majority back, they're going to be in favor of independent redistricting. And the parallel I'm trying to draw here, of course, is with Forrest. He's trying to limit, to some extent, the authority of the state's executive, which is the role he wants to be. So you have to wonder if there's a little bit of irony in here. Anyway, I think as we think about what he's chasing. All right. Next question. I want you to both to put on your vocabulary hats for this one. An unnamed lobbyist has tested positive for COVID-19. According to the News and Observer, that lobbyist recently met with 5 lawmakers. It's presently not known if the person was wearing a mask. The lawmakers were notified, but there was no internal communication from Paul Koble. He's the man who runs the legislature, letting other staffers know about this. The second confirmed case of someone working at the General Assembly felt inevitable. However, the lack of communication, the absence of a face mask requirement on West Jones Street, is getting to seem a little unnecessary. Senator Tom Tillis supports masks. Yes, even the president, Donald Trump, this week encouraged use, more or less. Give me a word to describe the legislature's internal approach to mitigating the virus. Rob?
Non-existent, perhaps. I mean, it's obvious that that's been an irresponsible behavior by a lot of the members of the legislature not wearing masks, by the fact that we had state lawmakers who had to, and maybe you too, Jeff, who I guess you haven't been there lately, but met people who regularly frequent the building have had to find out about this from the news. There wasn't even any communication to lawmakers from Mr. Koble letting them know that this had happened. I mean, it was inevitable, of course, and I'm sure there are more people who will test positive and probably already are positive. But it's you know, just the latest example of how the General Assembly has sort of just buried its head in the sand when it comes to this vital issue of protecting public health.
I would probably use the word cavalier. I think that when you are conducting the people's business, it is hard to say people cannot come in and out of the legislative building. You know, for a long period of time, they were doing the temperature checks and those kind of things as people entered the building. And after weeks of having not a single positive temperature raise or anything else, they did away with it for a few days, but then reinstated it. So I think, you know, in a lot of ways, they're trying to do take precautions, but at the same time allow the people's business to continue to go. I think we all agree. I mean, this was inevitable that at some point there was going to be someone in the building that did test positive. As I understand it, this person was asymptomatic, but certainly, you know, a cause for alarm. And it sounds like the precautions have been made. I think that at least one of the legislators who they had met with for more than just a minute or two is in a self-quarantine for 14 days, and so the precautions are being taken. And the General Assembly is like other buildings as well. You know, you can only make it so secure when you have people coming in and out.
Finally, fireworks. It is the weekend where so often so many of us lay out the blanket and wait for the show to start. Many, however, if not most, fireworks shows across the state have been canceled. Will you seek out a performance in the sky this weekend?
You know, I haven't even checked. I live in Raleigh, and I haven't even checked to see what is available. I mean, one of the things that I'm seeing kind of in the news media is if you are planning to go out, to be sure to check, because a lot of them have been canceled or they've been done in different ways. And so I think I don't know whether I will or not, because I don't know what's available in my area.
Well, I live in a neighborhood where there's some very lovely neighbors who keep their social distance and have a little mini fireworks display. They've had a couple of them already this summer, so we'll probably check that out. But, you know, this to me is really the perfect year for people to sort of skip the superficial parades and fireworks shows and maybe think a little more deeply about, you know, the American experiment and what it's all about, and maybe about the way the current president of the United States has been perverting it. So I think that people ought to maybe take this time, instead of just thinking about fireworks, maybe read Frederick Douglass's speech from 1852, What to the Slave is the 4th of July. I think maybe that'd be a good way to spend people's time.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch, Becky Gray, senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your holiday weekend.
Y'all take care.
Happy Independence Day.
Truncated version of this conversation can be heard Friday afternoons on the radio 450 WUNC during All Things Considered. You know the deal, I hope, by now. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Subscribe to the program and let us know what you think of it, what you don't like, what you do like, and perhaps who you would like to hear in the months ahead as part of our long-form conversations. Had another one of those just dropped this past week. You should check that out if you have not already. Had a free-flowing conversation with State House Representative Deb Butler. Hope you enjoyed that holiday weekend, and we will be back with you again next week. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff.